Okay, picture this. You turn off your TV, and now you want to kick back, relax, and completely overanalyze what you just watched. We made Galaxy Brains just for you.
Hi, I'm Dave Schilling.
And I'm Jonah Ray.
We're the hosts of Galaxy Brains, Polygon's brand new podcast launching Thursday, April 22nd.
Follow Galaxy Brains on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app to get new episodes in your earbuds every week.
That's right. Tune into Galaxy Brains, where movies, TV, and overthinking collide.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Enemies Monument Podcast. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Lavin, and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Doing well.
Good until Luis Rojas throws his game.
Listen, it's the Mets, so if there's one thing the Mets are known for, it's good managerial decisions.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, historically. I'm known for that.
When was the last, like, objectively good manager? I guess Bobby Valentine?
See, I'm not old enough to remember if Bobby Valentine was a good manager or not. I mean, but there are, at any one time in the majors, two quote-unquote good managers, and the rest are negatives, just varying degrees.
And Luis Rojas is not one of them right now,
no.
Unfortunately.
No.
Well, that means only up from here, then.
Yeah.
All right. Let's start with promote, extend, trade. And today is April 26th. And on April 26th, 1992, there was a riot on the streets. Tell me, where were you? Lucas, I'm sure that reference over your head.
Yeah, sorry.
Ken, Thomas, maybe one of you guys. Come on,
no.
Maybe.
I have no idea.
Oh, God damn it, guys. Sublime.
Oof.
Sublime.
Oof.
Oh. I got you. Okay.
All right. So, anyway, one of Sublime, well, not one of. Well, yeah, I guess one of their main mascot was Lou Dog, who is the lead singer's Dalmatian. He was featured very prominently on music videos and artwork and in their songs. So...
probably appeared on MTV a couple times back when they still had music.
Oh, probably.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. So let's promote, extend, or trade these following baseball dogs.
Oh, this is a good one.
First, nice. We have rookie.
Of course.
Naturally.
Next, we have – this one is kind of esoteric, I guess. Next, we have hot dogs. And last, but maybe least, definitely least – is Chris Mad Dog Russo.
Okay, well, oh. We're trading him. I mean, I'm not even trading him. I'm just DFAing him right out. Bye. Hot dogs versus rookie is actually a tough one because I actually love hot dogs.
Yeah, I love rookie more, so...
yeah,
instead
I love rookie more.
Promote hot dogs.
But it's a Yankee affiliate, you know?
But he's a... well, not anymore.
Not anymore.
That's true.
He's free from them.
Who are they affiliated with now? Or
technically, they got cut, but technically they are affiliated with the Toronto Blue Jays for like the first month of the season.
Right.
Yeah, they have like the weird thing with them.
I don't know. I absolutely love hot dogs. I love the cheap. Dirty water dogs. I love fancier hot dogs. Love hot dogs. I'm gonna extend the hot dogs just so we don't have hot dog erasure on this podcast.
I'm gonna have to agree because as much as I love rookie, I mean, I've had hot dogs.
I've known
hot dogs,
and now I want a hot dog.
God damn it. Hot dogs have improved my life longer than rookie has. So that's really just the deciding factor.
I didn't expect this to get existential, Steve.
Yeah. The real unfortunate thing is that where I am in the city, we don't have hot dog stands. We've got, like, various
Zittles.
Hispanic food stands, which is not a bad thing. Like, they're good. Don't get me wrong. But I want a hot dog.
Sometimes the dirty water dogs just hit the spot.
Yeah, absolutely. There are only three acceptable toppings on a hot dog. Mustard, what the fuck was it?
Sauerkraut.
Sauerkraut and stagnant cart water. The John Stewart pizza rant here.
Relish is acceptable. I will allow relish.
Yeah.
But ketchup, yes, though? Ketchup, no. No, no, no. I hope, Ken, Thomas, I hope you are not ketchup people.
Those red onions that are on the hot dog stands have are worth that for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And hey, at the risk of being called a heretic, I also enjoy a Chicago-style hot dog.
Oh, that has a bunch of other stuff on it, right?
That's yeah, it's like pickles, tomato, right? And celery salt and a pickle. I love pickles.
I could see that. I could see that.
You know, if nothing else, it's much better than Chicago-style quote-unquote pizza.
Casserole? Mm-hmm.
Which is not a pizza. It's a fucking casserole.
True.
Surprised you haven't decided to finish your pizza by springing some canned onion rings on it.
Don't give them any ideas.
Uh-huh.
They've already fucked pizza up enough. All right, well, let's move on now to the way too early draft update. And my guy, Judd Fabian, he only played in two games this week, because the Gators only played in two games. And in those games, he went 3-for-9 with a homer, no walks, and 3 strikeouts.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how many strikeouts, Steve?
So that brings him to 252, 347, 701 for the year, with 13 homers, 22 walks, and 54 strikeouts in 37 games. You know, strikeouts, it's just something you're going to have to live with him. I wish the average was a bit better. I mean, 252 as a college hitter is kind of...
That's low.
Yeah, it's not what you want to see.
It's a lot of strikeouts.
It is.
Like, it's making me think of... Griffin Conine, you guys remember him from a couple years back, and like he had a couple good seasons and then went to the Cape and had a really good Cape, but then all of a sudden he started striking out a ton, and now he's a dude that's like stupid power but probably won't make it because he strikes out too much, and he struck out less than Fabian is.
Oh yeah, I remember reading something a while ago when we first started doing the research on these guys, like the only other high level college hitter that had a strikeout rate comparable to Fabian was Casey Meisner from the draft 2 years ago. Uh-huh. And Fabian's strikeout rate at the time was still like 15% higher or something like that. So not what you want to see, but hey. Does Brady Haas at any point strike out, Lucas?
So he actually had a slow week this week, you know, slacking. He had one game where he went 1-for-3 with 2 walks. Another game where he went was a perfect 1-for-1 with more walks.
Just gonna pitch the round at this point.
4-for-4 game. No extra base hits to speak of, or at least they're not listed. And he hasn't hasn't homered since the 7th. So I think major league teams should just ignore him and let him fall to the Mets.
Glorified single hitter.
That's all he is at this point. 573, 685. That's batting percentage, and that's a batting average and on base percentage. Where the hell is the slugging number? The website doesn't want to give it to me. I'll just say high.
Over 1.
Yeah, good. No one wants to pitch to him with good reason. So, still trending towards that like top 7, maybe top 5 pick. We're not in the time of year where we start getting actual draft rumors yet, but trending up still.
Always good to see. Thomas, how was Andrew Painter's week?
So I'm going to go through his season so far because I haven't talked about him yet. So he's in Florida, so they've been playing since like February. He's appeared in 10 games so far this year, and has a 0.37 ERA. So
he's high school
to play.
He's good. It only says he started once, so I wonder if they're using, because he has a save, so I wonder if they're kind of using him like as a follower type thing to get him in more games. But he's 5-1, 0.37 ERA. He has struck out 74 and walked 13 in 38 innings and given up 16 hits. So he's good. that's the long and short of it. It is interesting that they're using that he only started one game, especially because he started 11 as a sophomore. So I wonder why they're doing that, like what the strategy is there. But he's been good.
Obviously. Yeah, but maybe he was coming back from like a mild injury and didn't get stretched out early enough. Yeah. Something like that.
But yeah, that's how his season's going. He's given up like one home run or two. But that's really, yeah, two earned runs, five runs. So I guess his defense is terrible, which I guess could get used to as a
future. Yeah, it fits right in.
And that's it. Yeah. He's good.
I wonder if it is an intentional thing that they're kind of like easing him and kind of holding him back a little bit. I wonder if it is an intentional thing because, you know, the draft this season has been pushed back. So I wonder if maybe it's kind of a way to give him some artificial helium late in the season, closer to when the draft is. I mean, obviously the high school season probably is over at the end of May, beginning of June, and then the draft this year is going to be in July. So you will have a couple of months where just kind of not much is going on. Well, not a couple of months, a couple of weeks, I should say. Obviously, if a guy kind of ends the season stronger, it looks more impressive.
Also, like from a pure your team, like coaching your team point, if you could get him in three games a week, pitching two or three innings, is that better than him just giving you a win one day and then not being able to pitch? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's another strategic part of it from the coaching staff. But I mean, he's good. he's better than all the kids he's playing against, and he's been like that since. Because on Max Preps, it has like his whole career stats, and he had like a 1 ERA on varsity as a freshman. So like, it's just one of those things where he's good.
High school baseball stats are so stupid.
Yeah,
it's so stupid.
All right, Ken, Adrian Del Castillo, he kind of had a dip last week. What's going on with him this week?
I wouldn't say it's more of a dip, just kind of more of the same from last week. Still, the triple slash is pretty much unchanged. He's currently at 297, 397, 453, 17 walks against 18 strikeouts, so more or less the same, but he still hasn't hit a home run in a while. His last dinger was a little over a month ago.
Right, that's what
we were.
So I'm
going to say his stock is still going down. He played two games this week, went 2-for-9 with a double. But again, for a guy who ideally would be hitting for some power, it's a little worrisome that we're now, what'd you say, maybe like a third of the way through the college season? 40%, maybe?
Yeah, 40. Yeah.
And he still hasn't really hit for much power. So maybe a little down.
Yeah.
You go.
So how many homers does he have on the season?
Three.
I mean, I don't know if I've made this point on the pod before, but I think Will Smith is probably the best catcher in baseball at this point, though he's slumping a little bit right now. But he only hit 9 homers in his entire college career. I wonder if there's an argument to be made that there's a swing change you could make with Del Castillo. I don't know enough about
honestly,
that.
Honestly, I do really like the swing. I don't think the bat-to-ball is going to be an issue. I think, maybe you could help him tap into a little more of the power.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think it'll come at some point.
Yeah.
He's kind of a big kid, right? Like, I'm not making that up. Like, he's
not,
kind of
not
tall.
Not beefy, but, like, athletic. No, he's, like,
why am I thinking
even 5'5", like, 11 or something?
Oh, yeah. He's way shorter than I thought. I was thinking, like, 6'2". I don't know why.
He's
I thought
he's listed actually on Miami, 5'11", 210.
He's a little bit bigger than Smith, who's 5'10", 195.
But I mean, also, you don't have to this is beating a dead horse in like the 800th week in a row, but you don't have to be a crazy good hitter to be a plus offensive catcher. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, I think this is something that we, and really anyone who's doing like amateur side talk about prospects, misses, because there's a level of coordination you probably want with your player dev people, right? Where mm-hmm. you want to ask them, hey, we like that this dude does X, Y, Z. He has this statistical hole in his profile. Based on what you see as a scout or coach in his swing, can you fix this?
Yeah.
And like, we don't have great insight into that, right? Because different coaches are going to think different things. Also, none of us are hitting coaches, really, right? So.
Yep. Well,
for sure.
The likelihood, you know, of him being around at 10 when the Mets pick is increasing, so it's yeah. kind of good. I mean, this is a guy that was
he's now like in the solid range.
Yeah, I mean,
I think he'll be available if that's what they decide to do.
In January, whatever, like there were at times mock drafts, so he was being picked like 3-4, like
yeah, no.
That was like projecting the bat to like go nuts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that is the kind of guy, if he, you know, I don't want to say if he writes the ship, because that's not really the right phrase, but like we've been saying, it's not like he's doing bad, but he is the caliber player that, when everything is going right, could be, you know, a top pick. So, I mean, if he falls to 10 and the Mets are able to get him, that is a big win.
Yes.
Well, the next couple of weeks will be exciting. We'll move on now to the CPBL, KBO, NPB updates. And the Unilions went 2-3 this week. So they're currently at 16-13 on the year, which is tied for first place with the Rakuten Monkeys. And pitching
the
rotation.
Monkeys?
The Monkeys, yes. Yeah.
Excellent. Why do they have such good team names?
The rotation wasn't really on fire this week like it was last week, which is why they were sub 500 this week, but they were all basically solid, respectable starts. Their losses, you know, 4-1, 4-3, 7-5, you know, with the exception of that last one, those are all pretty solid quality starts, and starters kept the team in the game. The LG Twins, they went 2-4 this week, and that leaves them, oops, I didn't write, that just leaves them at 11, okay. Well, they have 11 wins and an unknown number of losses, but they are
eight.
In first place.
Got 8 losses.
All right, there you go. Thank you. That leaves them still tied in first place. Last week, they were tied with the 2020 NC Dinos, the 2020 champion NC Dinos. And this week, they are tied with the Shinsegae Landers. And the Landers are a new team, technically. They are the former SK Wyverns, but... over the winter, the SK Telecom Corporation sold the team to Shinsegae, which is a big Korean department store. It's like the Korean Macy's. So,
what the hell is a lander?
A UFO.
It's like aliens. Yeah.
It's literally a UFO. Okay, that's pretty... You know, I'd like that more if they weren't replacing the Wyverns, which were perhaps my favorite team name in
any
league.
Yeah, with the lander.
Yeah.
Also, they use just a big L as some of their logo stuff, which...
That's... bad.
Yeah.
Here, wear this L.
It's, well, someone's not looking up at the memes because this is just going to get made fun of.
Maybe that doesn't translate into Korean as
maybe,
directly.
Yeah.
And it's a red L, too, I believe. It's a freaking scarlet letter.
Oh, no. They were the Wyverns. I could just stick with that. It was so cool.
So, even though the Twins... went 2-4. Hunsu Kim, he was hitting for a solid average, just about under 300, but he is starting to hit for power. His bat woke up. He had 2 doubles and 2 homers this week, so it's good that he's heating up because everyone else is still pretty off to a pretty slow start, except for that leadoff guy, Chang Ki Hong. And his OBP is 429 and his slugging is 420, so I always appreciate it when you have a guy with an OBP higher than his slugging.
Yes,
Brandon Nimmo-esque.
And last but not least are the Occult Swallows, and miraculously somehow, I don't know, they went 4-1 with a tie. So that bumps them up to 13-8-4 in the year, which is tied with the Yomiuri Giants for second place and just 3 games behind the Hanshin Tigers for first. And for the most part, pitching has been solid enough, you know, basically just keeping them in the game. And the offense has been doing its part. Yamada has really woken up. Him and Murakami, they both have 8 homers. That's the most in the Central League. They're both in the top 10 OPS. And just enough of the secondary guys in that lineup are hitting, you know, well enough to really make the lineup card dangerous, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to all that, the team, they activated a couple of foreign players that they signed over the winter. So they will be adding right-handed pitcher Cy Sneed, who is a former Houston Astros reliever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I haven't thought of that name in a while.
They're going to be adding right-handed pitcher Rick Vandenhoek, who is a journeyman, played for a bunch of teams. But I remember him being with the Marlins in the late 2000s and early 2010s. I'm sure he screwed over the Mets quite a few times.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah. They're going to be adding infielder Jose Ozuna, who was a backup guy with the Pirates for a couple of years. And I think the biggest acquisition that they're going to be adding is outfielder Domingo Santana, who played
That's awesome.
A couple of teams in the 2010s and had some really good years with Milwaukee and Seattle, like 30 homers 1 year, 25, I think it was, 21 with Seattle, like 2019, not even that long ago.
Yeah, so he was actually kind of good.
Yeah. Like, if he was still kicking around the majors, he would be the kind of guy I'd want the Mets to have on the bench as a...
He's the type of guy who balls out there and comes back.
Yeah, I could see that.
Again.
Like, I'd rather, if you're going to roster Almora and Pilar, I'd rather roster someone like Santana than Pilar, personally.
Yeah, I mean, Pilar's defense, I would actually have to look at the numbers and see if, like, is he actually good defensively anymore?
Like,
or is it just, like, the reputation?
Right? Hmm? Yeah. But you've got Almora for that, right? And then you have Santana as the nice right-handed foil to a lefty-heavy lineup.
Santana in 1,900 plate appearances has a 110 weighted runs created plus, which is pretty wild. Like, he was bad last year. Like
he fell off a cliff. Like, he just stopped making contact.
Yeah, so I wonder if he goes and fixes that and comes back. Because he's only, age-wise, he's only...
29?
He's 28 now. Yeah. So, he's still got years left. That'd be a fun person to keep an eye on.
Or his, actually, not a huge platoon split for his career. 114 against lefties, 108 against righties.
I mean, still, that's playable against righties.
So, yeah, I mean, you inject him into the lineup. If Murakami is hitting, if Yamada is hitting, that's a solid power threat in the middle of the lineup.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
So it doesn't matter how bad the pitches are, if you can be bludgeoning everyone else. Solid strategy.
Dave, have you ever watched a movie or TV show and thought, I want to immediately fall down a mind-bending rabbit hole?
Yes.
Well, good news, buddy. We're doing that every week on Galaxy Brains.
Hey, I'm Dave Schilling.
And I'm Jonah Ray, and we are the hosts of Galaxy Brains, the new podcast from Polygon, launching Thursday, April 22nd.
Each week, we'll take the biggest topics in TV and film, Star Wars, Stranger Things, James Bond, and whatever genre Christopher Nolan decides he wants to get into next, and launch them into the cosmos. It's a podcast where we discuss how the aliens in Quiet Place 2 won't be as scary now that we've seen them.
It's a podcast where we ask why, if the aliens have such good hearing, can they not hear you pee?
Or your heartbeats. It's a podcast where we say A Quiet Place proves all aliens are liars.
And then my brain actually literally combusts.
And I become a pile of drool.
On every single episode.
Tune in to Galaxy Brains.
Where movies, TV, and overthinking collide. We're launching Thursday, April 22nd, wherever you get your podcasts.
Follow Galaxy Brains on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app for answers to the biggest questions of today's biggest movies and shows. You'll learn a lot!
Like to never trust an alien.
especially when you're buying an old VCR for Craigslist.
I can't wait to hear that story.
It doesn't end well, Dave. It doesn't end well.
All right, so this week we're going to be doing the last of our affiliate previews. The minor league season is going to be starting in a little over a week now. Very exciting. And this week we're going to be talking about the lowest team on the ladder, the lowest non-rookie team, I should say, on the minor league ladder, the St. Lucie Mets. St. Lucie, formerly of the Florida State League, and formerly the Mets' high A affiliate, are now their low A affiliate, and they play in the low A Southeast Eastern Division.
So I was expecting like the South South League or something like that.
Well, it'll don't worry, it's coming. Don't worry. So, the other teams in the low A Southeast East are the Daytona Tortugas, who are the Cincinnati Reds affiliate. The Jupiter Hammerheads, which is the Marlins affiliate, and the Palm Beach Cardinals, which is the St. Louis Cardinals affiliate. So that's
boring.
Yeah, boring. I know.
Cardinals.
So in addition to those, they are also going to be those teams. They're also going to be playing against teams in the low A Southeast West, and those teams.
The low A Southeast West.
Low A Southeast Southwest. Low A Southeast West.
This is so bad.
And those teams are the Bradenton Marauders, which is the Pittsburgh Pirates affiliate, the Clearwater Threshers, which is the Philadelphia Phillies affiliate, the Dunedin Blue Jays, which is the Toronto Blue Jays affiliate, the Fort Myers Mighty Muscles, who were formerly the Fort Myers Miracle.
Is that brand new?
Yeah, that was for 2020. And
I think I missed that.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, there were a couple of teams that were rebranded, and obviously because of no season, they kind of got forgotten about.
And, yeah.
And some of the teams don't even exist anymore. Like the, I want to say it was the Connecticut Tigers. They rebranded as like the Sea Unicorns.
At least they didn't rebrand to the Big Red Owls.
Oh, that's true.
The Mighty Muscles have a mascot who is
a
muscle with a cape.
He's very strong. He's mighty.
It's incredible scenes. Mm-hmm. What this is, I love every minute of it.
So, wait! It's the crustacean or the shellfish.
Yes. Yeah.
So you got the Mighty Muscles. Then in the Southeast West, there are the Lakeland Flying Tigers, which is the Flying Tigers affiliate. And then last but not least, I have to say this clearly and slowly so I don't get tongue-tied, because you say this tongue-tied and very embarrassing it can be. The Tampa Tarpons.
Oh, yeah.
The Yankees affiliate.
Yeah.
What the hell is a tarpon?
Fish, I think.
Yes, apparently it is.
Yes, okay.
It's a big fish. Jeez.
So, yeah, that is the low A Southeast. So, managing St. Lucie Mets is going to be Reed Greenack. I'm saying that correctly, I think, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, Reed Greenack, he's going to be the manager.
And that's the first thing I remember him playing.
Yeah, he was hired to be the Columbia Fireflies manager in 2020, but obviously the season was canceled, and now that the Fireflies aren't part of the Mets minor league system anymore, he was just basically shifted. You know, he's going to stay in low A, but just going from Columbia to St. Lucie.
I remember people, like on ESPN broadcasts or whatever, they'd be like, yeah, very gritty Rays middle infielder, future manager type, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. That's exactly.
He like played defense and hit singles type guy.
Yeah, it's gonna be Brignac's first year as a manager, so it will be interesting to see what his style is, and if we get some of that behind the scenes stuff, that could be really, you know, stories from managers and stuff that reporters, excuse me, that could be kind of interesting, because he's so young. He's 35. So him and the guys that he's going to be coaching, there's only like a 15-year age gap, which is big, but not really, you know. So also interesting is the fact that the Mets aren't really surrounding him with any like old-timers, I guess, if you want to say, to kind of be like the steadying presence if things go wrong or for him to just kind of learn from. Brignac's bench coach is Jay Pecci, he's going to be 44, and this is basically his second year as a coach. He was the GCL Mets bench coach in 2019. Tommy Joseph, who is 29, he's going to be the hitting coach. This is his first coaching gig, and he was
Tommy Joseph was the former Giants prospect, right, that had all the concussion issues as a catcher?
I don't know. He was a player that retired last year, two years ago, whatever. Yeah.
He was on the Phillies for 2 years and then played for the LG Twins in 2019. And then
I think they traded for him in one of their – they sent him
– I'm going to go look this up. He was a Giant, yes. The Giants they got him for Hunter Pence.
That's it. Mm.
And then rounding out the coaching staff is Jerome Williams, who's 39, and he's going to be the pitching coach, and he has 1 year of experience under his belt. He was the pitching coach with Kingsport in 2019.
Honestly, that's kind of fun. They're just letting all the young guys go and do it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean,
young guys comparatively.
I mean, the Tommy Joseph. I mean, he's 29, and he's like that's really crazy.
And he was like at an alternate site last year, like so he was active up until recently.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
So, St. Lucie Mets could be some of those late inning bullpen calls can be interesting.
Yeah, I'm very curious. Like, it's hard to like say I'm excited about a coaching staff in the Southeast Southwest division or whatever the hell it is, but like it actually is kind of interesting to see how they'll handle everything.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we're gonna do like we did last week. Obviously, you know, this far down, it's kind of difficult to know what players will be assigned, but we'll take a look at our top prospect list and we'll make some guesses as to whether or not we think they're going to be sent to St. Lucie. Low A, St. Lucie. First, our number one prospect, Ronnie Mauricio. He already played in low A, so he is not eligible, I don't believe.
No.
Number two, Matthew Allen.
No, he's going to start at least at Brooklyn, I think.
Number three, Francisco Alvarez.
I want to say yes. Right.
I would say yeah, solely because he's never played anywhere full season.
Yeah, that's my guess too. Like, and he's a catcher. I don't wanna. He's got a lot on his plate.
Yeah, no need to rush him.
Development wise.
Number four, third baseman Brett Baty.
No.
Yeah, I would push him a level farther.
He's too good.
Number five, outfielder Pecoro Armstrong.
Yes. I think
hasn't played.
Yeah, I think he starts here and could make his way pretty quickly to Brooklyn, but I think he starts here.
And I have no qualms with starting him at a level that I'm pretty sure he'd be good at. Like, I'd be shocked if he's not good there, so I'm fine with that. Let him get some confidence.
Also, don't forget that GCL still exists, so he could be a candidate for GCL.
That's true, yeah.
As a high schooler, you know, last year drafted.
That's true, that's a good point.
But I do agree with you guys. I think that he has enough, you know, from Team USA experience and just being a very high-level draft pick that I do think that he can start off.
You could be a little bit aggressive with him, but I think he'll be fine there.
Yeah, I think it'll be more like I think at some point in our list we have like the six IFA outfielders in a row or whatever.
Yeah.
Yes.
those will be the guys that go to the GCL.
Yeah, that's where I think they go. You need to break that up.
All right. Next is third baseman Mark Vientos, who already played in Colombia in 2019, so he is not eligible. Nor is number seven right-handed pitcher Josh Wolf. Number eight, infielder Jalen Palmer.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. He starts here.
Number nine, right-handed pitcher JT Ginn.
When is he back?
Who probably will come back in like July-ish, I would say.
I'm still sticking with my playoff bullpen.
Yeah. Wherever he needs to go.
Yeah.
I imagine they at least start him there and then send him on his way, whoever needs help, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, presumably he'll be rehabbing at the Springside or whatever, so it would be pretty easy to send him to St. Lucie just for a couple games before moving him up to a more age appropriate level.
Yeah, I can see that.
Next up, number 10, right handed pitcher Franklin Killamay, who is, you know, basically
on the cusp,
who played in Major League Baseball, so I don't think that he's going to be pitching in low A. Same thing with left-handed pitcher, number 11, Thomas Cipucki. He already played in low A last year. Yeah. And number 12, infielder Shervian Newton as well.
Yep.
13, outfielder Isaiah Green.
I could see Newton being there just because Brooklyn might be crowded a little bit. But
less to do with him and more to do with how Brooklyn will be.
Yeah. In a case like that, though, that's when you just see maybe he's good in the outfield. You know, put him in right, put him in possibly center.
Mm-hmm. Didn't they say that about Mauricio, too?
Yes. Yeah. Throw him behind the plate, make him the new catcher. You just figure it out, you know?
Look, if Shervian Newton became a cat, I'd be here for it. That'd be fun.
Next up is number 13, outfielder Isaiah Green, who has already progressed past low A. Next is number 14, outfielder Freddy Valdez.
Yeah. Low A makes sense there. Mm-hmm. I think he'd be one I'd be comfortable pushing here, and then some of the younger guys I'd want to send to GCL.
To the GCL. Yeah. Some of the guys coming up.
Yeah.
I would send him to low A, just to kind of challenge him a little bit, since he was a highly rated international guy. Next up is number 15, right-handed pitcher Junior Santos.
Yeah, I think this level probably makes sense for him.
If we had the alignment that we had, you know, in years past, I would say he would probably be a guy that would go to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
But now that that doesn't exist anymore, it's either GCL, which is below his experience level, or St. Lucie low A, which is maybe a little bit above arguably. I don't know. I don't want to say arguably. I mean, it has been a very long time since the last time we saw him pitch, and he was good with the stuff, but not good with the results. So, but I would have him go to St. Lucie.
Really? He might be someone I'd really want to see how he looks in instructs first before I decide between the GECL and St. Lucie, but...
Yeah, that one's complicated.
Next up is number 16, right-handed pitcher Harold Gonzalez, who was on the cusp of playing in the majors and hasn't been low A for many a year. Next is right-handed pitcher Robert Dominguez.
I think St. Lucie, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got fun stuff. He could move fast, but I think I'd start him in St. Lucie, yeah.
He's a guy that might even be, I would possibly not even have him stateside this year.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he does not have any professional experience. So.
Some of the reports about his stuff are very, juicy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the stuff is good. A mid to high 90s fastball. It's hard to not to like that. And then a solid curveball, solid changeup. So
this probably goes back to what we talked about when we were talking about Brooklyn. Like, it makes more sense to push pitchers than hitters because you can still work on stuff as a pitcher even if you're playing better players. And if you're a hitter and you don't know how, you've never seen a breaking ball before, and you just have dudes throwing you mediocre sliders constantly, like, you're screwed.
Next up is number 18, outfielder Alexander Ramirez.
Yeah, so now I think the discussion between
GCL guys for me.
Between him and Consegua and Hernandez, and I'm probably forgetting one or two other IFA guys, like who goes to the GCL and who goes to St. Lucie. I think Ramirez probably goes to the GCL.
Yeah, he's never played stateside.
Right? No.
Yeah, exactly.
He has to go, yeah. Well, all the guys who haven't played stateside, I think I'd want to put them in the GCL to get their feet wet.
We have a Consegra and Hernandez got like 7 games.
Five at bat, yeah.
So what do you do with that? I don't know.
You could start them in the GCL, and oh, if they're hitting, just
hey, a GCL outfield of Ramirez, Consegra, and Hernandez—that'd be a lot of fun.
That would be good.
I don't know. With the guys who have missed like a ton of time, I would maybe just push them up anyway. Like Consuegra, the last time we saw him play was what, 2018?
Yeah. Yes.
At a certain point.
At some point, he's got to play.
Yeah, you got to push him above what he's seen, you know.
Because he can't be like 23 down there. It's not going to do anything. It's just going to waste.
That's a fair point, honestly. Again, maybe see how they look at instructs first. Like that's the there's so much variability with these guys at this level. It's a lot easier for us to say, yeah, this guy goes to AA and AAA. Once you get down here, it's like, well, what have you done over the last 4 months on the backfields that no one is seeing?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much variance. Next up is number 19, right-handed pitcher Dyson Acosta, who has already progressed past low A. Same thing with number 20, right-handed pitcher Sam McWilliams. So now that brings us to the aforementioned Adrian Hernandez at 21.
Yeah, GCL. I'd start him there.
Yep. Agreed.
And number 22, Stanley Consuegra.
So I understand what Ken's saying. I still think I'd send him to the GCL, but if people wanted him in St. Lucie, I think that's reasonable.
If he starts in the GCL, I would have a quick trigger. I'm talking about like 2 weeks if he looks good. I'd be like, all right, you're just wasting everyone's time down here. Go.
Yeah, I mean, with those guys, I don't want to say they're old because they're not, but just the amount of injury, you know, they both missed seasons because of injury and then missed season because of coronavirus. So we're talking about basically 2 seasons of just nothing.
Yeah.
After a while, you just need to, I mean, that's basically what doomed Desmond Lindsay. It's just the injuries and not being able to physically keep up and physically develop.
And on top of that, it's like, if you miss all that time, that's 2 years of reps. And
yeah, exactly.
It's like, you can't really make that up. Like, you can, but you're putting yourself behind the eight ball there. And
right, it's already extremely hard to be a baseball player to begin with. So, like you said, you're behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
All right, number 23, Andy Rodriguez is no longer in system. But number 24, Jordani Ventura, is
GCL, I think.
Yeah.
He played in the GCL.
I'm looking it up now because I don't remember off the top of my head.
He did, and then he basically spent a couple of weeks in Kingsport at the end of 2019.
He could go to St. Lucie. He has 33 innings in the GCL. He could go to St. Lucie.
Yep.
I didn't realize he had that many. I also didn't realize he was already 20. But he could go to low A.
And last but not least, Riley Gilliam, who is...
He's way past
way past that. I don't actually know if he ever even played in low A.
I think he skipped it, right?
Yeah, I think he started in high.
Because he was, what, like 22 and a closer already, so you could kind of...
Yeah, you could expedite the process with those kinds of guys.
You could super fast track someone like that, which I'm fine. Like, hindsight, but that doesn't matter to me. I agree with that.
So, I mean, if some of these guys get sent to St. Lucie like we're thinking, and I think quite a few of them will, another pretty exciting team, just like Brooklyn.
Like, AAA and AA is like pretend I do not see it, and the rest of it, I'm like, oh, hell yeah. Like, I'm excited about all these. And then this is what double and triple are going to look like in a few years. So that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all the talents low, like in the lower minors and a few guys up top.
All right. And finish things up now with some of the Wilponery of the week. And this week, the Wilponery of the week goes to Marjorie Taylor Greene. And honestly, I feel like probably literally at any point in time, you could say that she is going to be involved in some Wilponery. But this week she challenged Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to a debate on her Green New Deal legislation.
Debate saying, me, coward.
Pretty much, she said, quote, AOC, quote, doesn't know anything about the economy or economics. And AOC, being a graduate cum laude from Boston College with a bachelor in international relations and economics, probably doesn't know a thing about economics, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then she planned on debating her, quote, after I finish reading all 14 pages. So she was ready to debate against it without actually having read it first.
As one does.
As one does. For what it's worth, she did tweet like a day or two later, very proudly said that she read all 14 pages and she's ready to go.
These people are fucking caricatures of themselves. It's insane. It's really-
yeah, so.
Also, Marjorie Taylor Greene forever ruining Magic the Gathering because you can no longer write MTG.
Oh, that's
true. Oh, huh. That's funny.
We have to use the lowercase t then, too.
Yeah, I guess.
She just ruins everything.
God damn it.
That is how we felt about the Wilpon, so.
Yep.
Same emotional response there. All right, if anyone has any questions, comments, or whatever, you could send us an email at our email address, fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. You could follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Seipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at Ken1191. And Thomas is at SadMetSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And, of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week with a good episode. So, until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.